I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. Let's face it, the ice in the Arctic region is melting fast. We've been focusing on that every Monday for the past few weeks in our collaboration with the Threshold podcast. Most of the story we've been tracking about warming the Arctic is sobering. We've heard about how it's changing life in the region's native communities and the ways the big melt is bad news for the rest of the planet. But there's another side to this story, and that's what we're going to explore this week. As the ice melts in the Arctic, it's also creating new economic opportunities in the region. Here's Threshold's Amy Martin.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged out like the old stuff. Funny, but we'll travel along, singing a song. Whoa. Ethel Merman was my idol. Side by side.
I'm in Nome, Alaska, with Richard Benville.
B-E-N-E-V, like Victor, I-L-L-E. First name Richard, and I'm mayor of Nome. And that's a kick in the ass.
Nome is a town of about 3,800 people sitting on the southern side of the Seward Peninsula, the knob of land that sticks out into the Bering Sea toward Russia, way out on Alaska's western coast. Richard is giving producer Nick Mott and me a tour in his van.
My ambition all my life, been the theater. I'm a song and dance man. Give me a microphone, a top hat, and a pair of tap shoes. I started tap dancing when I was six. Hello, Central!
That's his catchphrase. Nome was a gold rush town, and it still feels kind of wild westy, with lots of bars and streets that quickly turn into gravel roads. Richard grew up far away from here. He says he was an up-and-comer in the New York theater scene in his youth, but he had a drinking problem, so his family intervened and sent him to live with his brother in Alaska. That was 36 years ago, and he never left. He founded a tourism company, led after-school programs for the kids of Nome for decades, and he was elected mayor in 2015.
This is a cool town. This is a really cool town. And it's a cool time to be mayor because so many exciting things are happening.
Like
and we'll
what?
Talk about the opening of the Arctic. Then we could start there.
When you say the opening of the Arctic, what do you mean?
You ask what's happening? What's happening is the decreased accessibility of going through the Bering Straits for a longer period of time each year because of climate change and the opening up of what is referred to by many as a new ocean. And that would be the Arctic.
More ships are now coming to the Arctic, including more and bigger cruise ships. Tourism is booming in many Arctic communities, and cruise companies are offering trips to watch polar bears, go dog sledding, and even view receding glaciers before they disappear.
If people can get there, they'll go. Tourism according to Dickie.
Some Arctic communities aren't very excited about the increasing cruise traffic. Many towns up here are tiny, so it doesn't take many visitors to overwhelm the locals. Ships full of tourists can also bring pollution and disrupt wildlife, but they bring a lot of money, too. And Richard welcomes them to Nome.
It's an opportunity for us to shine not just Nome, but the region.
In 2016, a ship called the Crystal Serenity became the first large cruise ship to navigate the Northwest Passage, the fabled route over Alaska and through the high Arctic Canadian archipelago. It took 32 days, and Nome was one of its first stops.
Now we have a cruise that begins in Seward, Alaska, comes up, spends, as I say, 800 people come to tea, and then goes on across Northwest Passage, Greenland, and down the eastern coast, Nova Scotia, all of that, and then ends in New York City. Well, now that really is an interesting thing.
Richard wants to deepen Nome's port so even more big ships can dock there, and he's hopeful those ships will bring more than tourists. He sees a future with Nome as a major way station, with ship traffic driving growth in population, jobs, and prosperity. He's not blind to the downsides of climate change up here, but as mayor, his job is helping his community, and if he can harness the forces of climate change to do that, he will. It's a confusing mixture of threat and opportunity here in Nome, and it's part of a story that's unfolding all around the Arctic.
Where do you stand when you are out, like, when you're doing this? I want to stand next to you. We'll pretend we're on the ice.
Okay.
I'm halfway around the world now with Captain Pasi Järvelin on the bridge of an icebreaker named the Polaris in Helsinki, Finland. Icebreakers are like the offensive line of the ship world. They power through the ice, cutting pathways for research boats, oil tankers, military ships. Basically, any craft hoping to travel through polar oceans may need help from an icebreaker. We're up on the bridge at the top of the ship. It's so tall, we actually took an elevator to get here.
So you can go and sit there.
That's your seat?
Yep.
The bridge of the Polaris is sleek and modern, with huge tinted windows and dozens of screens all around. I'm sitting in the captain's seat, trying to take it all in, when suddenly the chair starts to move.
It's, whoa!
Posse had pushed a button that made the seat roll forward and lock into place, apparently so the captain can stay right where he or she needs to be, even when the seas get rough.
Like, if we were going through ice right now, what does it look like from up here? Like, what would you be seeing? I mean, is the ice piling up on either side of you? Like, what is it?
Well, it's a quite masculine job, yes, I would say.
You feel like a badass.
Yes, like a badass, yes. It's very exciting, and I like icebreaking a lot, yes.
A lot of people in Finland like icebreaking.
There is approximately 130 icebreakers in the whole world, and around two-thirds of those have been designed and built in Finland. So we dare to say that we are the world champion in icebreaking.
This is Tero Vauriste, the CEO of Arctia, a state-owned icebreaker company that owns and operates the Polaris. And believe it or not, Tero says icebreakers are a growth business these days.
So I'm often asked that, well, the ice is melting, who needs icebreakers? But it's actually vice versa. Yeah, there is less ice, but it doesn't mean that the conditions get easier. They actually are more variable.
And as those conditions change, icebreakers are leading the way through, breaking open new trade routes at the top of the world. If you're looking to cross the Arctic by ship, you basically have three options. One of them is the Northwest Passage that cuts through the vast Canadian archipelago. That's the one Richard Benville was describing. On the other side of the globe, there's the Northern Sea Route along the Arctic coast of Russia and Scandinavia. Russia is actively developing this route as a way of connecting Europe to Asia and making money from the ships that pass by. But if sea ice continues its precipitous decline, ships might someday be able to avoid both of these routes and use a third one, the Transpolar Sea Route, more or less straight across the top of the world.
So it means that there will be increase in the transit traffic, increase in tourism, and of course the great investment potential, which is worth $1 trillion, is spread around the Arctic.
All that potential cash isn't just about traveling through the Arctic. A 2008 report from the U.S. Geological Survey said the Arctic is the biggest area of unexplored petroleum deposits left on the planet, with huge potential reserves both onshore and under the sea. Countries and companies around the world are eyeing those deposits, trying to figure out if, or when, or how they might go after them. Canada currently bans offshore oil and gas development in its part of the Arctic. The U.S. had a similar ban put in place by President Obama, but it was overturned by President Trump. In fact, in late October, the U.S. gave provisional approval for a project off the North Slope of Alaska that could produce the first oil to be extracted from U.S. Arctic federal waters.
But the biggest investment potential is in the Russian areas. About 20% of the Russian GDP is coming from the Arctic areas.
Tero says Russia is already extracting huge amounts of natural gas in northern Siberia, then liquefying it, putting it into tankers, and shipping it to Europe and Asia along the Northern Sea Route. And fossil fuels aren't the only resources in the Arctic. There are also valuable minerals and metals.
Do you feel like there's a danger of profiting off of this kind of global disaster?
That's what everybody tries to put me to. But I'm not going there. Because I'm saying that the Arctic is not a park to be preserved, nor it's a dirty area where big and nasty companies conduct their dirty business. But it's an area where you need to have a holistic approach on whatever you do.
Tero says holistic means thinking about environmental impacts and the people who live in the Arctic, not just profit. But is there a holistic, environmentally sound way to extract oil and gas? There are certainly ways to drill that are more or less damaging, but even if we don't spill a drop in the process, will still burn it, and that just speeds up the warming of the Arctic, a process that's already moving fast.
The ice that is receding and melting in the Arctic Ocean, it will probably be gone in 20 or 30 years for summertime.
René Sederman heads up Arctic policy initiatives for Finland's Foreign Service. He also serves on the Arctic Council, a forum for the 8 Arctic countries and 6 indigenous organizations. And he says interest in the region is growing quickly.
So you just have to look at the globe and see who might have interests to deal with when that happens. Not only the US and Russia. China very recently published its Arctic strategy.
But René says it would be wrong to characterize all of this activity as simply a mad dash to cash in on the Arctic as climate change makes it more accessible. He says there's also a lot of cooperation and negotiation. Arctic Council members have agreed to help each other out on search and rescue missions and potential oil spills. They also collaborate on all kinds of scientific projects.
So from this point of view, you could maybe say that the Arctic Council is a confidence-building measure.
That will be important because if or when the Arctic becomes fully navigable in the summer, it could bring waves of change. And not just in the way goods are shipped around the world. Observers say it could rearrange alliances between nations and shift the basic geopolitical order of the whole planet. And there are big concerns about pollution. Any oil spilled from drilling or from ships would be extremely hard to remove from frigid Arctic waters.
What is concerning is that when ice recedes from the Arctic Ocean, there will probably be more traffic on the sea routes, and that will increase the risk of environmental accidents with ships.
There's a whole new world opening up here as the Arctic warms and the ice recedes. There are dangers, there are opportunities, and for many people, like Polaris Captain Pasi Järvelin, there's the thrill of blazing trails through a new frontier.
How are you feeling when you're out there breaking up some ice?
Well, like they say in Titanic, that I'm the king of the world.
You know your captain is confident when he has no qualms about referencing the Titanic while standing on his ship. But the greatest challenge here in the changing Arctic may not come from the ice, but the lack of it. The planet needs polar ice to help keep it cool. But as the Arctic warms and the ice melts, it triggers lots of feedback loops, processes in which warming creates new conditions that just contribute to more warming. And this is another one. The warming Arctic is giving us access to more of the very fossil fuels that are causing the warming. In the long run, climate change will almost certainly be humankind's most expensive folly ever. But, as economist John Maynard Keynes famously said, in the long run, we're all dead. And in the meantime, there's money to be made in a changing Arctic. For The World, Amy Martin, Helsinki, Finland.
Amy's reporting on climate change in the Arctic comes to us through our partnership with the Threshold podcast and radio program with funding support from the Pulitzer Center. You can check out all of Amy's stories at theworld.org/thebigmelt. And if you want the whole season of the Threshold podcast, it's at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.